Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
A life that has the stories to back it. A life to be proud of. It's a Winchester life.
Yeah, baby. 6'8 Western. Oh, mule deer, baby, right there.
Tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
This is the Primal Podcast. At Primal, hunting is more than just a hobby. It's a way of life. And whether you're an expert or just getting started, Primal can help make you a better hunter. Now, here's your host, Mike Avery.
Welcome once again to another edition of the Primal Podcast. My name is Mike Avery, and this is one of the podcasts I do every month, and I can't tell you how happy I am to be working with the folks at Primal Outdoors. This time around, a very interesting guest. This is a guy that I first became aware of a couple of years ago. And the guy who was telling me about him said, look, you got to get in touch with Kyle Green of the Greenway Outdoors. He said he's a young guy from Southeast Michigan who is making a name for himself in the world of outdoor communication. So I followed up on this. And the more I got to learn about Kyle, the more impressed that I am. Rather than have me talk about it, why don't we bring Kyle on the line here to let him tell his story. Kyle Green, welcome to the Primal Podcast.
Thank you, Mike. It's so good to be talking to you again. I've been loving how much time we've got to spend together. You've been on our podcast, I've got to be on yours, and now this one, it's been a blast.
It is a lot of fun, and I enjoy talking with you because I have much respect for you. Now, you and I are different generations. You're young enough, honestly, to be my son. But what you have accomplished and what you are doing is far more than I have ever been able to do in this world of outdoor communication. So congrats to you.
Well, I appreciate that. I don't know how much of that is true, but I appreciate that. A lot of people know who Mike Avery is. So I do appreciate it, though.
But a lot of people who, look, I think a lot of people know who Kyle Green is. I mean, more people are going to know in the future. I mean, come on, Kyle. You've got your show now on History Channel. How cool is that?
It's a big boost for us, for sure. We started the show about 8 years ago, and we started out on like the Pursuit Channel and Sportsman Channel and Outdoor Channel and that sort of thing. But we always set ourselves apart by being focused on production quality. We wanted our show to be such a high production quality and such a unique storytelling in every episode that it would stand apart in the outdoor industry and that it could make it to a mainstream network. And it took us about 6.5 years to finally realize that goal. But yeah, this past year we had our first season on the History Channel. And after just the first couple of weeks, we were signed for seasons 2 and 3. So we're currently in production right now, filming for a second season of History Channel. And it was great to see sportsmen and women come out in droves and support us, because I'll give you an idea. When we first signed with History Channel, they said, as long as you hit 70% of the viewership of our top show, we'll keep you. But if you don't do that in 1 week, you're gone. And our projections for you, their projections were between 62 and 72%. So that's what they projected us to do. And if we went under 70, we were gone. And the first week we did something like 88%. That was our worst week. After that, I think we ended up at 130% was our best week. So that ended up, you know, being a big honor for us. And it was in week 4. So we got to see that progression from the time we started, and each week we saw that viewership go up and up and up and up. And I'll tell you what, the most unique thing and the biggest goal about it, Mike, was I wanted to reach people outside the industry. You know, if hunters and fishermen don't like my show, that's fine. I want new people to like it so we can get the next generation and different demographics involved in the outdoors. So to have the emails that we're getting, hundreds of them, from people completely like, hey, you know, I thought hunting was bad, but now I realize this because I learned this from your moose hunting episode, and now I want to try hunting, and your recipes make me want to try wild game, and, you know, all those different things. That was what was exciting for me, is new people outside of the industry taking an interest.
And that's one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on the Primal Podcast, is this emphasis on a younger generation and different demographics, because the audience that I speak to oftentimes is, like, to use a cliche, preaching to the choir. You're out there reaching that new group of people, but why is that so important these days, Kyle?
Close to 55% of all hunting and fishing licenses are sold to white males over the age of 55. So you're looking at probably 60%. So in about 10 to 12 years, when that demographic starts to get out of hunting and fishing, and not necessarily that they lose interest, but maybe they just buy a turkey license, but they don't fish anymore because it's too much of a pain and they sold the boat, or they don't ice fish anymore, so they only do this. And I'm going to stay in Ducks Unlimited, but I'm not going to hunt anymore, so they don't buy their license. And as those things dwindle and happen over the next 10 to 12 years, we're going to find ourselves probably in like 2035 to 2040 fighting an all-out onslaught of war. It's going to be a war, because all that funding is going to go away. And then if we don't replace it with the next demographic, we are not going to have clean water. We're not going to have species sustainability efforts. We're not going to have anti-poaching efforts. We're not going to have all the things that make sure we have more white-tailed deer in North America than ever in recorded history. All of that money is going to be gone if we can't replace it with the next generation and new demographics. And the numbers are showing we're not successful yet. We're seeing that those numbers are still trending downward with millennials and Generation Z. And that even though there's so many millennials, we don't even need that high of a percent of them, but we need to get them involved to buy those hunting and fishing licenses, to fund our DNR, to fund all those things. And if we don't figure it out in the next 10 to 12 years, we're going to lose that funding and we're going to lose that war. You look at California, they had trapping for many years, and California was big for trapping, you know, many moons ago. But now, because there wasn't enough trappers participating, it became that they didn't sell enough licenses, so not enough money was raised. So that program, the fur trapping, became a detriment to the Department of Natural Resources, thus being a detriment to the government itself. Boom, they closed it down. So as soon as you don't have the funding and you are a detriment to the government, they close you down. And that is what we're trying to prevent. So when I wake up every day, I say, man, we need to sell more hunting and fishing licenses. We need to get the next generation involved. And that's why my entire outline of my show is geared towards getting new people into the outdoors, showing them how it's done, showing them how to cook it, teaching them these conservation lessons. You know, in 1960, the turkey was almost extinct in Michigan. Now we have a huntable population because hunters have done this and this and the National Wild Turkey Federation. And now when I join the National Wild Turkey Federation and I buy my hunting license, it helps up to 5 or 6 wild turkeys get established, and I'm only maybe taking one. You know, teaching people those lessons in our show, and then also showing them the culinary arts, you know, showing them how to cook them. And I think showing that A to Z and explaining that conservation messaging to that new audience is the key. And the numbers on History Channel, like I said, to get signed right away for a second season when they were sure we were going to be one of those one and done, shows that people are taking an interest in it.
These lessons that you're trying to get out there are lessons that people of my generation, we just knew. It was part of our history.
Right.
It was part of our tradition. It was part of our culture and our family values. We grew up knowing this type of thing.
100%. And to be honest with you, you kind of knew where your food came from too. You know, you look at like this phenomenon of vegans and people that are against hunting and stuff. Really, I mean, from 1970 all the way to Adam and Eve, we were well aware of where our food comes from. Everyone had a farm. Everyone knew where their food came from. They knew that their chicken was a killed chicken. Their chicken tenders didn't just magically appear. But when I'm seeing comments from people that don't like my show, that, you know, through this outreach, I'm not going to just suddenly transform everybody's mind, right? So I get a lot of pushback too. And I'm seeing, and I can't even believe I'm saying this out loud, because I was always the guy who was like, people aren't saying that. But people are saying, why don't you go to the grocery store and buy meat where you know animals are harmed? I mean, that is, I can't even believe I have to say that that really happened. But when hundreds of people say it to me, I have to acknowledge that we don't know where our food comes from anymore. And, you know, that was one of the beautiful things that I will say about COVID was it sparked an interest in people like, well, wait a minute, these supply chain issues, these food issues, oh, I can't buy meat anymore, I can't buy milk, I can't buy this, I can't buy eggs. It really got a lot of people interested in hunting and homesteading and you know, processing and creating their own food, which was really exciting for us. We saw license sales actually go up during COVID because people had that spare time as well. But it's also converting those people into giving them the information they need to be able to continue it. That's why we pump out 24 how-to videos a year. That's why we do 52 podcasts a year, 52 vlogs a year, teaching people those lessons, and 13 episodes on History Channel a year, is to teach those lessons to hopefully keep them converted and keep them coming back and keep them interested in hunting and fishing.
And the way to reach people of your generation is not the traditional way that we used to. It used to be broadcast TV. It used to be broadcast radio. And look, we can still reach a lot of people that way. But these days you have to go beyond that. And you guys are very effective at that.
Well, we kind of have an approach for everything. There's people that like long form podcasts, so we put that out every week. But, and you're very good at this too. You're well aware that shorts, reels, and that sort of content is a great way to reach more people more effectively. I mean, I remember, matter of fact, when TikTok was first coming out, you made a post on Facebook saying, I'm getting this many views off of this video on TikTok this quickly. And you were one of the ones preaching about the platform. And I think that's why you've stayed on top so long, is because you've always watched what was happening in content. But in the same right, we follow in your footsteps in that sense of, like, we created the vlog series for the people that want to see YouTube videos every single week and just kind of stay engaged with what we're doing, whether we're walleye fishing or making syrup or tending to bees for honey or teaching people how to put together a diesel heater, whatever it might be that week. We reach them that way. And then obviously the History Channel, we've also focused heavily on the streaming platforms through History Channel, through Amazon, through Roku, through Tubi, you know, those big platforms to reach them there as well.
This is the Primal Podcast. If you would like to learn more about the company that makes this podcast possible, go to the website primaloutdoors.com. That's primaloutdoors.com. We're talking with Kyle Green of the Greenway Outdoors, their website, thegreenwayoutdoors.com. But that is just one place online you can find Kyle and his crew. And speaking of your crew, Kyle, I find it very interesting that you're all, you know, all young guys, all very passionate, and you appear to be good friends.
We're best friends. You know, blood, sweat, and respect we've earned from each other every single day. My entire team is the same team that's been with me since day one. So that you start putting ages to that. Ryan's only 23, and we've been working on this shit for 8 years. So that tells you something about the age group of what we have here. But, yeah, we woke up every single day focused on making our production quality the best it could be. And I'll be honest with you, if you watch our first couple of seasons that were on Pursuit Channel, I can't even watch it. I can't even sit in front of the TV. It makes me cringe because it just wasn't good yet, you know. But I will tell you, the guys that are with me, it's just four of us. Well, now five. Actually, we've got a fifth now. But we just wake up every single day focused on how we get better. We never take shortcuts. And, you know, it's almost like the military mindset where we're fighting for each other every day. We never want to have to go do a corporate job or anything like that. This is what we want to do. And we want to be able to remain mission-based and focused every single day. So I have the absolute best team in the world. They're the hardest working. It's funny I'm saying this live with you now, but the History Channel, you know, they thought we had like a team of 30. And that tells you how awesome my team is. And I will say I have nothing without them. They are everything to me, and we spend every waking moment together, so it better be that way. You know, we've got an office in Fenton, Michigan, where we spend every day, or we're on the road. So, you know, it's 7 days a week with us, and we're just fighting to keep the staff small so that we can make sure the message is what we want it to be. Because if we go corporate and we go big, and yeah, we see that with some of these other shows that have gotten really big. There's one in the industry that's very big right now, and I was listening to their podcast the other day, and it broke my heart. One of the main marketing people on their team was talking about how he doesn't like the Second Amendment, and this is supposed to be the voice of the outdoor industry. I just heard that the other day. Hmm. So very so I keep my team small, and we're all very like-minded.
I feel like whatever cause you guys embrace, you would be effective at fighting for it. But why this cause? Why this why the outdoors? Why hunting and fishing and shooting and trapping? Why is this your passion?
You know, I think it's the most important thing on the planet. I actually do, and I'll tell you why. Is like we were put in charge of this earth to take care of it by God. It's that simple. So if I was to face God right now, and He was supposed to say, "What did you do for me? What did I tell you guys to do?" I think this would have to be the answer. I mean, this is what sustains our food. It's what sustains mankind. It's what sustains His creation. I think we owe it to Him. I think it's that simple.
Then how did we get so far removed from that premise?
Yeah, I think we removed God from the premise. I think that's what it is. I think that's the key to it. I think that, you know, as we move farther and farther away from God, I think we'll see more and more negative things happen. People get greedy. People get corrupt. And as people move away from God, their politics, the way they process information is different. I mean, there's a way of thinking where you think everyone owes you something, as opposed to I'm going to go create something for myself. And all of that trickles down into these policies, into these things. We just got off a phone call, and I know you're good friends with them too. We did a podcast with MECC today, and we were talking about some of these policies that they were fighting against. And to me, it's demonic, and it makes no sense, and it would do terrible things to our ecosystem. And you have to wonder why people would want to do terrible things to our ecosystem, why they wouldn't be so concerned about the earth and about the planet. And by the way, can we at least take a look at the North American model and see how successful it is? Can we just stop and take a second and go, wow, it's working. Let's pour into that, as opposed to trying to create all these new models like the Green New Deal and all these things that we know they won't work just based on what we've seen work. Why can't we focus on what works? Why there's more white-tailed deer in North America than ever in recorded history right now is because we had so many people involved in hunting for white-tailed deer that people were buying their licenses. The North American model works. We've seen it work. We're trying to bring back Africa right now with a similar model. We know it works. And God told us to take up our quiver and arrow and hunt. God told us to do this, and we see it working. What other piece of information do these people need?
In your world, at your age, with the size of your audience, I know you deal with a lot of people who are they think differently than we do.
Sure.
How do you deal with those folks?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny is we engage with them quite often, whereas, you know, we've received advice as far as Facebook and Instagram and stuff like that to just don't engage with them, don't bother. I do. We just had a prominent vegan come on our podcast and debate me for an hour and a half. And I'll tell you what, he was very good in debating. He was very good at manipulating facts. And if I didn't live, sleep, breathe, and eat this from the time I was 12 years old when my dad took me out for my first deer hunt, I don't know if I would have been equipped to be able to argue those things, because people on the other side have a great way of articulating things and leaving out pieces of information. I'll tell you what, it's an interesting podcast, and the guy, they had ideas like you wouldn't believe that I've never heard before. And you have to be prepared and you have to be ready. And because I get to live, sleep, breathe, and eat this every day, I feel I owe it to people in the outdoor industry to engage in those conversations, sometimes in a funny way, because that's our sense of humor. But I do. I go directly to them, whether it be Facebook, whether it be Instagram. If you go to our Facebook page, I mean, you look on those posts with 400 or 500 comments, you'll see me sprinkled in there, because I think it's necessary. And I know that I can knock holes in their stuff because I spent years studying it. And by the way, if they come up with an idea I like that is good, I'll admit that too. But for the most part, I engage directly with them. I think that's the only way I can do it.
Did you ever dream? I was going to say when you were a kid, but in my eyes, you still are in some ways a kid. Did you dream when you were a young boy? Did you, growing up in Southeast Michigan, did you ever dream that you would find yourself where you are today?
The very first deer hunt I went on, it was a November 15th morning. My dad took me up to deer camp, and on November 13th and 14th, I had hunter safety. So that tells you. So it was a November 15th morning, and we went out on the 14th. Back then we could bait, put out some bait. My dad explained to me what to expect, you know, got me set up in the blind. But the next morning he was sending me out on my own for my first hunt. So I was going to be alone. And I still remember that first morning, a doe came running through, but like 45 yards away with a bunch of trees and stuff. And it was so quick, I only saw it for a flash. And at that point, I didn't even have a doe tag. It was just an antler tag. So it went through, and I was like, oh, no. If that's an opportunity, if that was an opportunity, I am not going to do well. You know what I mean? Because I was like so shocked that I saw a deer. I couldn't even fathom trying to get the gun up and make all that happen. And about 3 hours later, it was probably like 10 a.m., my first deer came running through and then stopped, and it was a buck. It was a 3-point. And I remember getting set up with my 30-30 that my grandfather had passed down to me, and I shot that deer. And I remember just all the stories the night before, everyone was telling me how they shot these big bucks, all the guys at camp. They'd shoot it, it'd do a big kick and go run off, but mine just dropped. And I was like, oh, no, did I do something wrong? You know, just because it was, you know, just so overwhelming. And I remember walking up to it and then called my dad. I said, are you ready to be proud of me? He goes, yeah. So he comes rushing over. He had already shot a 9-point that morning because he's that good. And he comes running over to me. You know, I was about probably 800 yards away. So he took the truck around the woods and came walking up the path. And we gutted it and we cleaned it and we ate the heart that night. And I remember thinking I couldn't wait to get home to cook it for my mom and sister. And from that moment on, that realization of like, I'm cooking it for them. I was like, this is what I'm going to be doing this forever. I knew my obsession was there and that I was going to find a way that this is what I was going to do for a living. And, I really did. I did see it. And then 8 years ago, if you look at our notes, that we had on the coffee table in my little condo at the time, the same team that's with me to this day, the goal was to get to a mainstream network to sell more hunting and fishing licenses. And that's what we woke up every day, and we've gone through hard times. There was, because we couldn't just push products and we couldn't do things like everyone else is doing, because that's not something you see on Netflix. You know, you watch Pursuit Channel and it's, you know, a lot of infomercial type stuff. And we could never do that because that's not what you see on Netflix or these big platforms. So we said we couldn't do that. We ran out of funding and we lost everything about 4.5 years ago, to the point where I didn't see a way. But God stepped in and gave us our daily bread every day, just enough to get by until the point now where, you know, we feel that we're pretty successful financially, spiritually, mentally, physically, and emotionally even. But God gave us our daily bread because we were focused on that goal that glorified his name. And I think that's for anybody. If you pick something out that you want out of this life and you're willing to give up everything, even food, even your home, even the power or electricity at your house, whatever, if you're willing to give up every single thing and follow him, and it's a mission that will glorify him, you will see that the daily bread appears somehow. You will get just enough to get by, but that's what it takes. And going through those wars that me and my team have gone through together, it has made us, we were saying, I was speaking at a wild game dinner the other day, and I said, if someone came in here shooting right now, my entire team would come to me before they would exit. I know that, you know, but it's through that. It's through that growth, through that learning. I get emotional even talking about it now, and I'm with them every day, you know. Now I'll walk out and they'll make fun of me and we'll go right back to being guys. But that's the truth.
Well, your passion and your dedication are very impressive. And I'm glad that you're now being rewarded. And some of the ways you're being rewarded are some of these cool trips that you're able to go on. You were telling me about one coming up in Hawaii where you're going to be hunting something. What are you going to be doing out there, Kyle?
Well, we are going to be hunting feral cows and Mufflin sheep. So feral cows on the Bing Island about 150 years ago, the farmers' cows got out into the mountains, and then they've been up there breeding and surviving. They've got no predators. They are the kings of the island, I guess you could say. And imagine a giant bull that's never seen a human or has only had negative interactions with humans, who has not been snipped, who is defensive, territorial, and back to what cows were for millennia before we turned them into farm animals. And it's like the bulls that you see running down those people in the Spanish streets or the, you see at a rodeo.
Yeah.
They're monsters. And they say it's 4 times more dangerous than a grizzly bear hunt. And we're going after those.
I think about, you know, as a kid growing up on a farm, I had some experience with bulls, and they were behind an electric fence, and they were still terrifying. So to be out there in the wild facing these things down, and what a unique opportunity. I mean, to hunt something like this that most people have never done. I'd never even heard of it. How cool is that?
Yeah, it's really awesome. And to be honest with you, I had stumbled upon an article one day, and I couldn't even name it now. And I was like, what? That's a thing? And then Jeffrey got on it and hunted down how we could pull it off. And just that's how we pick episodes of 22. People think there's like this big organized thing. It's like, hey, you know what'd be stupid and fun? And that's how me and my team pick which episodes we want to do. And the goal is to do stuff that nobody's ever done before. We want to do content and episodes on mainstream TV that hasn't been done by 50 other people before us, you know? So we tend to do less whitetail. In our personal life, we do a lot of whitetail, but we tend to do less whitetail and turkey and bass fishing and focus on access deer in Hawaii or noodling for catfish or hunting pythons in the Everglades or moose in Maine and, you know, doing the more extreme cool things. And I do think that goes a long way with millennials and Generation Z that say, man, I want to do that. I want to try that, you know, whereas a lot of the traditional outdoor content that we see is a lot of like GoPro footage deer hunting in a tree that some kids like me might find boring. I want to be out exploring and I want to cover 12 miles in a day. I want to be hanging off cliffs. I want that kind of adventure, you know? So we create that content for people interested in that, or at least want to live vicariously through us.
To do something new, to do something unique, something that's never done before in today's world of media and social media, that's a big job. You know, I'm at the point in my life where I look at things and go, that's not new. That's just a rework. That's a remake. So to come up with truly new things, that's a pretty big deal.
Well, we do our best. And not to say we don't do remakes, because that is, you know, some episodes we are passionate about. But like, for instance, we did a turkey episode, which you can stream right now on Roku and Tubi and History Channel. We go on there and we're like, okay, if we're going to do a turkey episode, it better be incredible. So we actually set it up with the National Wild Turkey Federation, where we went to South Carolina. And we actually participated in doing controlled burns and started real fires. And we spent days in the woods outside of hunting just to try and catch a glimpse of a turkey on a roost, where days were spent just trying to get that footage, because it's rare, in order to build the story of one being on the roost and calling back to us. And those are the ways that we try and set ourselves apart, where it's like filming takes a week for us of an episode, and three of the shots might take two or three of those days. Just because that's what it takes to get the weirdest thing. And then you got to be willing to be out there at 4 a.m. until, you know, 8 a.m. before filming. And that's where my team, you know, that no one's going to outwork them.
From your perspective, do you have to harvest something to have a show?
You know, that's an interesting question. It's one of the reasons I like the vlog is because I can say no. You know, the weekly vlog, we might go out and rabbit hunt and get although we did get three rabbits, but maybe we wouldn't have gotten rabbits. Or we did a squirrel hunt with SEI. It was a squirrel hunting competition where we got a bunch of kids involved, and our show actually sponsored it. And we didn't harvest the squirrel. It was negative 10 degrees outside, and not many people did. And we still were able to air that. But for the History Channel series, the truth is we really do. I hate that answer, because it kind of goes away from how I feel about a successful hunt, because there's times where, you know, we fail, where it's still one of the best trips. But for History Channel, it kind of feels like that we do. That's one of the reasons I actually like that turkey episode as well. In South Carolina, we did fail. And Mike, I made a big deal about it. I was like, we failed, you know, but some of the best hunts are when you fail. And I really articulated, and I spent a lot of time on that voiceover in order to articulate it the way that you would, of what a failed day really feels like and how some of the best conversations with your buddies take place there, and. But then at the end of the episode, when we came back to Michigan, we did succeed and get a turkey, even though we failed in South Carolina. So we kind of overall, the content itself has to have success in it. But if we fail, we try to highlight that as much as possible, because it is a reality for a new hunter, especially.
All right, I want to take this back to the beginning of the conversation. You said we've got about, in your opinion, 10 to 15-ish years before the pendulum really swings. What has to happen? What do you have to – what can you, Kyle, what can you, one guy and a crew of good people, how can you possibly change this, affect this?
Well, my hope is that if we can reach 1 million people per episode – and we can convert 10% of those into at least considering it or buying a license, or when votes or when things come up and our bills are passed or legislation is pushed in front of people and they get their chance to vote at the ballot box, that they remember these lessons and that's what they focus on. And on top of that, we also have a 501c3 where we're putting camps together where we're actually going to teach kids hunter safety and get that next generation involved in it as well. So hands-on, I want you to create as much content every day that is compelling, that tells a story, that encourages somebody to go, I got to try this.
Very cool.
That's what I'm focused on.
Very cool. Tell me more. I wasn't aware of your foundation, that part of the business. That's something I have a passion for. In fact, I'm working with MUCC right now on raising some money for their youth camp this summer. But tell me what you've got going on, Kyle.
Yeah, and I have a big love for MUCC and a lot of what they do in Michigan especially. What we want to do is a scalable program where kids are coming. We're working on acquiring the lands and the facilities and stuff like that right now. But I see it being a 2 to 3 day camp. And I'll actually tell you the whole platform, because it is unique and different. One of the problems with a lot of the camps that exist and a lot of the programs that exist, whether it be hunter safety or an engagement hunt or something like that, where we see a lot of problem with the R3 is there's no way to continue the communication with that next generation. So what we're going to do is create this camp where kids will come get hunter safety certified, and they will go through a lot of the same things that the MUCC camp is doing. And I'm betting that in some way, shape, or form in our Michigan branches that we'll be working with them on that program where they'll go through and get hunter safety. But then what we're doing is we're building a high production how-to video content library. And you may or may not have had this when you were young. I'm sure your kids did. There was something called AR quizzes when you were in school. And what would happen is you would read a book and it had a point value. And then after you read the book, you would have to take a quiz online. And if you got 8 out of 10 or 18 out of 20 or whatever it was, you would earn the points for that book and you had to have X amount of points to get a grade. So what I want to do is create the how-to video library, which we're working intensively on right now, that kids can do that, where they can watch the content, learn the lesson after how to tie a fishing knot properly. Here's another way to tie a fishing knot, how to set up for walleye, how to set up your new fishing rod and reel, how to clean a shotgun safely, how to shoot a clay properly, all those different lessons in a high production setting, which is what we're working so hard on. Teach kids how to pick the right bullet for your hunt. You know, a kid gets a 308 and he just buys 308 ammo, but he doesn't know that a ballistic tip is different than an Accubond, which is different than this and that. So teach those lessons, and then those kids can earn those points. And then as they earn points, that will be able to be converted to buy outdoor equipment and gear. That way kids aren't just given the outdoor equipment and gear, they're earning it through learning. And that is what I want for those kids, to be able to earn that equipment and buy that hunting and fishing equipment. Because we can have kids that have never hunted or fished before and never even seen a cricket in their life go to a camp and then go back to the inner city and never have an opportunity to do it again. They're not going to get that hunting and fishing equipment. They're not going to earn that stuff. We're going to give them the opportunity to earn it. And then once they hit X amount of points, they're going to get to do a re-engagement hunt, whether it be a deer hunt or a pheasant hunt, with our team that I will put in place. So that way they can get, you know, I see it being a 4-year engagement program with them where they go to the camp, they learn from the how-to videos, they earn their own equipment, and then get to utilize it in 2 engagement hunts with us. Now they've learned what they need from the content, from the camp, and from those engagement hunts, and now they can effectively go in the field and use it. And then I want to create a community online where those kids and those people can still interact with each other through chat rooms and boards for people that are in the program should they have questions as they continue their hunting and fishing journey. So that's my mission and my goal. We're in the fundraising stage for it right now, but the Greenway Outdoors Foundation is a 501c3. And I do sense that with the camps and stuff, we'll be partnering with MUCC and other people in other states as well.
You don't do anything on a small scale, do you?
Not even a little bit. Not even eating.
Oh, Kyle, I appreciate you joining us on this edition of the Primal Podcast. How do people find you? Where do we learn more about you?
I would recommend going to thegreenwayoutdoors.com. You can find our content there, our vlogs, our podcasts. The links to watch our show on History Channel and all of that stuff can be found on thegreenwayoutdoors.com.
Well, you're doing a great job. Again, I have much respect for you and your team, and I appreciate your time.
Well, don't forget, you're the one that planted this seed many years ago. So thank you.
That's nice of you to say. Kyle Green of the Greenway Outdoors at greenwayoutdoors.com, my guest this time around on the Primal Podcast. Again, a big thank you to the folks at Primal Outdoors for making this possible. If you want to learn more about Primal, their people, their products, and how to use them, go to the website primaloutdoors.com. That's primaloutdoors.com. My name is Mike Avery, and I will talk with you next time right here on the Primal Podcast.